Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we are discussing Part 5, Chapter 22. The discussion prompt. Sorry, just logging into my thing. How should Karenin approach the problem of his unhappiness? He seems very unhappy with his situation. And I was a bit worried in the previous chapter that he might, retreat a bit, go a bit hermitish in his sadness because of his attitude of being like everyone's laughing at him and that kind of thing. Maybe he's going to hide away from the world. I'm worried for his self-esteem is what I'm worried about. Look, I'm not saying he's the most fun guy in the world, or he's not even really my favourite character in the book, but still, I don't like the idea of him just being so hard on himself. I am Norwegian, said Countess Lydia Ivanovna Rekap. She was the naked lady at the ball earlier in the book. Vronsky's nickname for her is Samovar, because she's always heated about something. Lydia is the centre of Anna's social circle in Petersburg society, but it was through Anna's husband that she knew Lydia. She's tall and plump and with unhealthy sallow complexion, but with lovely eyes. The Countess loves everything which does not concern her, and if I remember correctly, Lydia's faith was very influenced by that travelling German preacher who taught a highly personal but also shallow kind of Christianity. Haha. I can't believe the first thing Lydia did to help Karenin was to tell Sirza that his mother is dead. Gwanardal said, I fell behind again and got caught up again this morning. Good to see you again, Gwanardal. Welcome back into the fray. The fray. What a gloomy past few chapters. Yep, indeed. I feel for Karenin. It seems like he has been trying to make the best decisions possible for himself and gotten taken advantage of at every turn. I'm skeptical of Lydia's motives as well. Telling a kid his mum is dead is way overboard. Even before that, I didn't like her. Maybe she reminds me too much of overly helpful religious women I have met in my life, but she seems like a gossipy busybody. Oh, language. JMMA8779. Sorry, everyone, for that foul language. Gossipy busybody? Gee whiz. JMMA8779 said, is she interested in Karenin, perhaps? What the hell is the deal about telling the kid his mum is dead? What's the extent of his knowledge of the situation? This seemed way over the top. You know, I must have been tired when I read yesterday's chapter, because I didn't even catch the bit where she told the boy that his mother was dead. So I must have been half asleep. That happens sometimes. I'm so glad this community is here to recap what happened. It's the best way to read a book. Chapter 23. The Countess Lydia Ivanovna, when quite a young and ecstatic girl, was married to a rich, aristocratic, very good-natured and most jovial profligate. About 2 months after their marriage, her husband left her and only answered her ecstatic assurances of tenderness with ridicule and even with animosity, which those who knew the Count's good nature and saw no fault in the ecstatic Lydia were quite unable to explain. Since then, though not divorced, they lived apart, and when the husband did meet his wife, he always treated her with an unchanging venomous irony which seemed inexplicable. The Countess Lydia had long ago ceased to be in love with her husband, but since then had never ceased to be in love with somebody else. She was in love with several persons at once, both men and women. She had been in love with almost everyone who was especially notable. She was in love with all the new princes and princesses who became connected with the imperial family. She was in love with metropolitan and suffragan and a priest. She had been in love with journalists, three Slavs, Komissarov, one of the ministers, a doctor, an English missionary, and now with Karenin. Komissarov, a man who saved the life of Alexander II by knocking the pistol from the hand of a would-be assassin. All these passions, ever waxing and waning, did not interfere with her carrying on very widespread and complicated relations with the court and society. But from the time she took Karenin under her special protection after his misfortune, from the time she exerted herself in his house, labouring for his welfare, she felt that all her other passions were unreal, and that she now truly loved only Karenin. The feeling she now had for him seemed to her stronger than any of her former sentiments. Analysing that feeling and comparing it with her previous loves, she saw clearly that she would not have been in love with Komissarov had he not saved the Tsar's life, nor with Ristich Kudashirtivsky, but for this Slavonic question, but that she loved Karenin for himself, for his lofty, misunderstood soul, for the high-pitched tone of his voice, with the long-drawn inflections, which she thought charming, for his weary eyes, for his character, and for his soft hands, with their swollen veins. She was not only glad to meet him, but searched his face for signs of the impression she created on him. She wished to please him not merely by words, but by her whole self. For his sake, she now paid more attention to her dress than ever before. She caught herself meditating on what might have been had she not married and had he been free. She blushed with excitement when he entered the room and could not repress a smile of delight when he said something agreeable to her. For some days, the Countess Lidia Ivanovna had been greatly excited. She had heard that Anna and Vronsky were in Petersburg. It was necessary to save Karenin from meeting her, necessary even to save him from the painful knowledge that the dreadful woman was in the same town with him, and that he might come across her at any moment. Lidia Ivanovna found out through acquaintances that what those disgusting people, as she called Anna and Vronsky, intended to do, and tried so to direct her friend's steps during those days that he should not meet them. A young adjutant, a comrade of Vronsky's, through whom she had her information, who hoped through her influence to obtain a concession, told her that they had finished their affairs and were leaving Petersburg next day. Lidia Ivanovna was beginning to breathe freely again when next morning she received a note and with horror recognized the handwriting. It was Anna Karenina's. The envelope was as thick as parchment. There was a large monogram on the narrow yellow sheet, and the letter had a delicious perfume. Who brought it? A commissionaire from the hotel. It was some time before the Countess Lidia Ivanovna could sit down to read the letter. Her agitation brought on a fit of asthma, to which she was subjected. When she grew calmer, she read the following, written in French. Madame la Comtesse, the Christian feelings which fill your heart encourage me to what I feel to be the unpardonable boldness of writing to you. I am unhappy at being parted from my son. I entreat you to permit me to see him once before my departure. Forgive me for reminding you of myself. I address myself to you instead of to Alexis Alexandrovich, only because I do not wish to give him pain to that high-minded man by reminding him of myself. Knowing your friendship for him, I feel that you will understand me. Will you send Serza to me, or shall I come to the house at an appointed time, or will you let me know when and where I can meet him away from home? I do not anticipate a refusal, knowing the magnanimity of the person on whom the decision depends. You cannot imagine the yearning I have to see him, and therefore cannot imagine the gratitude which your help will awaken in me, Anna. Everything in that letter irritated the Countess Lidia Ivanovna in its matter, the hint contained in the word magnanimity, and especially what seemed to her its free and easy tone. Say there will be no answer, said the Countess Lidia Ivanovna, and at once opened her blotter and wrote to Karenin that she hoped to meet him about 1 o'clock at the palace at the birthday reception. I must talk over an important and sad matter with you, and we can arrange where. Best of all at my house, where I will have your special tea ready. It is necessary. He sends a cross, but he also sends strength to bear it, she added, to prepare him somewhat. The Countess Lidia Ivanovna generally wrote 2 or 3 notes a day to Karenin. She liked that way of communicating with him, which had an elegance and secrecy absent in their personal interviews. Alrighty, there we go. Lidia Ivanovna has the hots for Karenin. Who called it? JMama8779 absolutely called it. Well done, you. Have your say about this chapter over at the subreddit. Thank you for listening. I will love you forever for listening. And I'll see you tomorrow. Peace.